Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
You're listening to Where We Are, a weekend conversation on faith, politics, family, and culture, hosted by me, Michael Ware, and my wife, Melissa. We bring our wide-ranging experiences in politics, ministry, and nonprofit life to bear as we discuss the issues of the day. On this week's episode, we're going to assess the state of the 2024 presidential campaign. This is Where We Are. This is Where We Are. We are the Wares. I'm Michael.
I'm Melissa.
Melissa, we're in March. We're making our way through the year.
Oh, no. It's going to be March Madness, isn't it?
It is. It's definitely going to be March Madness.
Oh, man. It happens every year, and every year I'm like, please take this cup for me.
Yes. I don't watch college basketball during the regular season, but I will watch one or two games during the conference, during different conference playoffs, and then once the bracket's announced, I'll read the like 3-4 lines that they, you know, CBS Sports or Yahoo has, ESPN has on each team, and then I develop completely irrationally strong opinions about the teams, and try to watch as much college basketball as I can. And so that's what you have to look forward to, babe.
Yeah, I don't look forward to it at any time. And when you said March, all of a sudden it just came to me.
Like, I don't understand the realization, what is it about the horror.
It's all over the social media. It's all over the news. Everybody's talking about it constantly. And I just do not care. And it's just in my face. It's shoved in my face.
Ah, yes. Okay. No, that's fair. I'm not going to argue you.
All right. Well, there we go.
Out of your position.
I just Ron Swanson my way into that one. Curmudgeon. Okay. What were you going to say? Sorry.
Well, honestly, the one thing I wanted to make sure that we did before we got into the subject of this episode is I just had to give a shout out to Ann. We met Ann I met Ann. Mm-hmm. You, sorry for you. You didn't meet Anne.
I know.
Anne attended the book event that we did with David Brooks this past week at East City Bookstore. And Anne's a listener of the pod, had a really wonderful conversation with her. Wanted to give a shout out to Anne. Thanks for coming out to the event. Thanks for a wonderful conversation. Thanks for listening to Where We Are. All right. So with that, Melissa, let's get into the presidential. We thought that we'd do an episode that assessed the state of the race. It is Super Tuesday is coming this Tuesday in two days. It is very likely that it will be mathematically impossible for Nikki Haley to win delegates outright following Super Tuesday. She's not really talking as if it's an option for her to win the nomination outright at this point. And so figured this was a good time to talk about a general election between Joe Biden, Donald Trump. And so, Melissa, kick us off. Where do we stand? Where do we stand right now as we look at presidential election in November between Joe Biden and Donald Trump?
Yeah, so we've got a bit of new polling, and that's what we're going to be working off of, at least for the next few minutes, that shows Trump pulling a bit ahead of Biden in a general election matchup. So there was a New York Times Siena poll of 980 likely voters, which put Trump at 48%, Biden at 44%, so that's plus 4 for Trump. And there was a recent Forbes and Harris X poll of around 3,000 registered voters, and that had Trump at 52% and Biden at 48%, so the same margin, plus 4%. So we looked a bit into, and just to say 10% in that New York Times Siena poll did say that they don't know or refuse, so there's about 10% sitting there. So we dug a little bit into that particular poll in just to see what was going on, just start to look at what different demographics are doing. Now, with the caveat that we are still far out from people actually going to vote and selecting their candidate. So we take all of this with a grain of salt, but this is like good temperature taking. Would you say that, Michael?
Yeah. No, I mean, we are far out from this election, but this is sort of the state of the race. As we're on the precipice, I think, of, I mean, a lot of people would say the general election has already sort of kicked off. So, yeah, what are we looking at, Melissa?
So we've got, so in terms of enthusiasm, that was an, you know, what comes closer to how you feel about Joe Biden or Donald Trump being the nominee for president? 48% said that they were enthusiastic about Trump, while 23% said that they were enthusiastic about Biden. You know, so you take that and you think about, you know, the base and how excited is the base about the candidate and things like that.
Yeah, and the corollary of that is by a 3-to-1 ratio, you know, 26% of Biden's voters are dissatisfied but not upset, while only 9% of Trump say that. So there's a, at this point, a significant enthusiasm gap, which tends to have implications for turnout.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, so a couple other numbers before jumping into some demographic stuff here. So 65% of voters think that the country is heading in the wrong direction, according to this particular poll. And then 43% believe Biden's policies have hurt them personally. That second one is one that causes me to pause, especially because the Biden team has been already, even before like the, you know, the general election started, even before primary started, you know, Biden team trying to tout his not just his agenda, but what he's achieved. Part of what is going to be their strategy to combat all of the age narrative problems that he has is, okay, what has he achieved? I've gone and done, yeah, I'm 81, but what have I done? I've done A, B, and C. And if 43% believe that Biden's policies have hurt them personally, that really cuts down the potential efficacy of that kind of general election focus for his team. I mean, the State of the Union address is coming on March 7th this week, this Thursday. And I highly expect that the Biden team is viewing this speech, and I said this 2 months ago, that they will be viewing this speech as a way of combating the age issue, but also trying to, and, you know, the typical revving up the base. That's, you know, it's always done that. But also touting all of his achievements so that this enthusiasm number, you know, jumps up as well. This Sotu speech is very important for him to sort of reset with a lot of people who might be upset with him, especially with Gaza and Israel and all kinds of other issues. So put that number out there, 43% saying that his policies have hurt them personally, as a very important number to be watching.
Absolutely. And I agree. The State of the Union will provide a forum for them to test out in a high profile way how they're going to approach touting their accomplishments, what is most salient with voters. So yeah, I agree. It's a significant, it comes at a significant moment, and the Biden team will be looking to use the speech to reset and redirect conversation, and we'll see if they're successful in doing that.
Right. So some demographic stuff to point out from this New York Times Siena poll, Michael. What were some of the points that you and I were making before we hit record?
Well, look, as Donald Trump winning 23% of black voters, that would be almost double what Trump got in 2020 among black voters, which, as folks will remember, Trump gained among black voters from his 2016 mm-hmm. numbers. And so, again, just the caveat, this is one poll, we're months out from the election, but it is significant that you have 23% of black voters suggesting they'd vote for Donald Trump. One of the other interesting numbers that stuck out to me, Melissa, was Donald Trump winning 45% of Hispanic voters to Joe Biden's 23%. So this New York Times poll has Donald Trump winning Hispanic voters
mm-hmm.
in 2020. Joe Biden more than doubled Donald Trump's numbers with Hispanic voters. Let's see. One other interesting stat here is Donald Trump coming pretty close to Joe Biden among non-white, non-college educated voters. Biden wins 50% of those voters, but Donald Trump gets 42%. Maybe one more stat I'd pull out here is Donald Trump trouncing among 45 to 64-year-olds.
I was about to say that the 55%
to 37%. Meanwhile, Joe Biden wins among 18 to 29-year-olds, 54 to 41. It's relatively close among the 30 to 44 set. Donald Trump has a 5-point advantage there. And then Joe Biden wins among those 65 and older by 9 points, 51 to 42. I think, yes, this is one poll. Yes, there's a precedent for having... in 2020, there was a lot of rumbling about sort of some polls showing, especially among Hispanic voters, things being closer than they ended up being. But you certainly can't ignore these numbers either if you're the Biden team, and certainly if you're, you know, Donald Trump gets 20% of the black vote, that would be pretty jarring, not just in terms of the 2024 election, but the implications that might have for the Democratic Party, and what does the Democratic Party's coalition look like if black voters, if 20% of black voters are voting for Donald Trump and, you know, 40% voting for Trump as well. And so, look, like this poll is a disaster, but it's one poll. But if this poll reflects the state of the electorate, the Biden campaign just has a ton of work to do. And part of the issue is, there are weak spots all over their coalition. And are they able to reach out? Are they able to shore up some aspect of their base without turning others away? I think that's the real sort of predicament. What do they feel they need to do to improve among Hispanic voters, for instance, or or suburban women, and is there a cost there? You know, is there a cost right. with other demographics? That's going to be a key question facing the Biden campaign. I mean, look, you talk to the Biden campaign, and they'd say that this is early. Voters haven't quite registered. You know, what it means for Donald Trump to be yes. the nominee. They're going to reprice in the costs of having someone like Donald Trump as president once the campaign like really gets underway, et cetera, et cetera. They probably also say like we haven't even begun to tell the story of the first term. We haven't really begun making the case. And like all that is basically true. Here's what I'd say, like, re-election campaigns are difficult.
Yeah, I was about to say, you've worked on two presidential campaigns, and one of them was a re-election campaign.
Yes, and look, in 2012, Barack Obama had the benefit of being able to be a bit ahead of the curve on an economic populist message and running against a Republican nominee who was primed to be sort of vulnerable to that kind of campaign. But a re-election campaign is tough. Yes, you have a record to run on, but you also have to defend what happened in those 4 years. Relationships can be frayed. Independent voters typically vote against the status quo, and so you're working with some headwinds there, particularly when, as has been the case for quite some time now, a vast, vast majority of Americans believe the country is on the wrong track. It's hard to win re-election when that's the case. Donald Trump learned that lesson in 2020. So it is going to be tough. One thing that can be said, Melissa, is that this is a national poll, and national polls are not going to mean much. This election is going to come down to six states, maybe four. And so these national polls help give you a snapshot of the electorate as a whole. But really, we're looking at Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona. Okay. Those are the six states that I think are going to decide this election. I think as I've, you know, at this point, as I've sort of taken a look at this, we could have a late night. You know, I think Nevada, Arizona, it's very possible, you know, in 2020 that wasn't as important because, you know, Joe Biden won. He was 36 electoral votes over 270. Arizona and Nevada, they account for what is that? I think Arizona is
Arizona's 11.
Arizona's 11. Nevada's 6.
Yeah.
And so we very well could have a race that's within 17 electoral votes in Arizona and Nevada. Those states coming in, yeah, you know, so, being really important.
Yeah. So just a reminder, the 2020 election, which was Trump versus Biden, Biden got 306 electoral votes and Trump got 232 electoral votes. Now, of the six states that you just named, Biden won all of them: Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia in that election.
And, you know, significantly, you know, he won them. He won so many of them by the tightest of margins. Wisconsin, yes. You know, it's been a while since I've looked back at this map, and it was just stunning to see again. You know, he won Wisconsin by 20,000 votes. He won Georgia, where over 5 million people voted. Joe Biden won Georgia by 12,000 votes. In Arizona, where over 3 million voted, he won by 11,000 votes. And so, you know, it doesn't take a big swing here for it to be, at the very least, a much closer race, and really just for Trump to win. I mean, remember, 5 of the 6 states that I mentioned, so excluding Nevada, 5 of the states that I mentioned are states that Biden flipped, that Trump won in 2016. So these are states that Trump has already shown he can win.
That he can win, yep.
And that Biden only won. I mean, Pennsylvania, he ended up winning by about 80,000 votes. But again, Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, these were very tight states. Melissa, I think, yeah, one question people are, I'm sure that's like ringing in people's heads is like, how did we get here? Like, why is this the general election we're talking about? How is Trump going to be the Republican nominee for a third presidential election in a row? And, you know, what do you... Let me ask it to you this way. This New York Times poll surfaces that, you know, 53% of voters believe that Donald Trump committed significant federal crimes, serious federal crimes, and yet... It's that poll, the same poll, that this New York Times poll that showed that 53% of voters believe Trump has committed serious federal crimes, that show him winning a race for the presidency of the United States by five points. 48% of the, I mean, he's 2 points away from 50%. So what would you say to that, Melissa?
What I would say to that is, over the last few weeks, I've noticed both on the Democratic and the Republican side that there's been a lot of chatter about Trump's legal issues. Now, for the Republicans, it's been about Nikki Haley. Will she stick it out in this race through Super Tuesday? Because just in case Trump's legal troubles actually come home to roost and he is convicted, that delegates may end up going with her because she is the safer, better bet. Now, on the Democratic side, it seems like that there's been some chatter as well that says, or is sort of pinning hopes on the legal issues coming home to roost in a way that feels like when you see poll numbers like the ones that you just told us about, with the amount of people who would continue to vote for Trump despite being convicted of serious crimes, and the term serious crimes is in that question, that it really wouldn't affect a lot. And we've seen, you know, with the rise of Trump again, because remember right after the midterms, he wasn't doing too well. And there was a lot of chatter that he wasn't the best bet in the Republican race. And then some of these indictments started happening and his poll numbers only increased. And so I would say any kind of reliance on this part of the 2024 election is a fool's errand, in my view, at this point in time.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree at this point. The question of, you know, should it be, is a separate question. I don't think that folks should be waiting around much longer for the fact of Trump's legal issues to decide this race. I think Democrats need to prepare for an election in which that is not decisive. You know, how are you going to win if that isn't a deciding factor? And so, you know, what should the Biden campaign be leaning on? You know, I think character is still going to be a live issue. I think that a lot more can be done and will be done to remind voters what it was like to have Donald Trump as president, which is, and I think Donald Trump can't help but remind folks of that as through new behavior that you know transpires over the coming months. You know, I think the latest debate over IVF suggests and will reinforce again for Democratic strategists this idea that abortion is now a political winner for Democrats. And I think it's going to take center stage in this campaign. I have all kinds of personal sort of disagreements with that approach. But the polling is just very clear. This is one of the few issues in which voters have confidence and prefer Democrats' approach. And so I think that's going to take up quite a bit. One thing we didn't talk about, though, is, and again, you know, I want to be, we've talked about this before on the show. I think the politics around abortion completely changed after Dobbs. Some of the old strategic thoughts and some of the arguments that I and others, you know, would make around trying to argue the Democrats needed to move to the center on abortion, like the political strategy behind that, just the whole environment changed following Dobbs. However, I did find it interesting in this New York Times poll, Biden and Trump running even among women. 46 to 47%, and that includes leaners. So folks who said they weren't sure who they were going to vote for, but they leaned in one direction. And so, you know, I find that interesting. I don't think that's, you know, in 2020, there was Biden won significantly among women. But it's a very interesting thing in the post-Dobbs landscape, as so many are arguing that really Democrats invest a great deal into the power of, you know, running against Trump on abortion. Well, we're in the post-Dobbs environment. Abortion is very much in the public discourse. And at least in this poll, it's not winning women for Biden. Now, I think some on the left would argue, well, he's not talking enough about it. The president really needs to dig in here. And that's the debate. That's part of the debate that's going to play out, I think, within the Biden campaign itself, but certainly among Democrats generally, you know, especially if these kinds of polling numbers continue. But so character, I think women's rights are gonna be viewed by Democrats as a key lever here. Melissa, anything else that you'd say is something the Biden campaign should amplify or address in order to turn these numbers around in the coming months.
I just don't think that the team should underestimate the power of the, basically the workaround that the Biden administration had to find on student loans. I see the millennial numbers and the Gen X numbers for Biden in this New York Times Siena poll. And I can't help but think about the student loan debacle and how it was, you know, the Supreme Court, you know, took that option away from the campaign, took, you know, up to $20,000 away from people. And I think that I've read some articles that there's been some internal polling on how many people actually hang quite a bit of their vote on this particular issue. And it's more than you would think. And so, you know, if I were running the SOTU this week, I would have somebody who is signed up for the SAVE plan, who is able to do something else in their life because they've signed up for it. If I were the Biden team, I'd be putting out how many people have so far signed up for SAVE and what amount of money that they are, that collectively all these folks who have signed up for this plan are actually saving. I don't think that these kinds of issues that aren't like, you know, abortion or immigration, the, you know, the sort of bigger meatier stuff that gets a ton of 24-hour news cycle play and all that, shouldn't be discounted, especially because there's so many other issues that are just going to hit a stalemate in Congress when it comes to passing legislation, like on immigration and border security. Like, you know, the Biden team, is very eager to say that they've done something on the border, but, you know, Congress in an election year is not going to be moving on a lot of things. So the team, I think, will have some other policy areas or ways in which the American electorate is benefiting from the Biden administration, and they're going to have to figure out the messaging for it.
Yeah. Melissa, do you think, how seriously do you take the electoral consequences of the Biden campaign's approach in Gaza?
I'll be completely honest with you. I don't think it's electorally going to matter much. I think that the state of Michigan is where it plays out, and we just had a primary there where we saw that the number of uncommitted voters was only marginally higher than Obama had, and so I was waiting to see that number to see how much of an effect this issue has had there in that state where electorally that could matter. And obviously Michigan is one of the six states that you've named. It's very important. Biden flipped it. The whole, you know, Michigan is deeply important. But I think in the end, when it comes down to a general, like the primary could be a protest vote, but when it comes down to this general election in November, I think that that's the only state in play when it comes to this issue. And I do think that it will be a collection of other issues that really, that altogether affects how Michigan goes and not just that issue.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're basically right. I agree with you is what I'm trying to say. You know, I think a lot will, Lord, I hope that, you know, by November we're in a more, that there's a permanent or long, you know, long lasting ceasefire.
Yeah.
If the conflict extends into November, then, you know, maybe that changes, but I tend to agree with you. I think I mentioned in a previous podcast, you know, would be interesting what happened if Donald Trump decided he was going to muddy the water a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not convinced that the electoral cost to Biden here will be severe. But I'm open to seeing how it develops. I mean, I think it's important not just to look at the Arab American vote, but also 18 to 29 year old.
Yep.
Younger black church folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, you know, this puts pressure on the Biden coalition in a number of ways, but I just tend to agree with you that I don't think it'll decide people's enough. I don't think it'll decide a huge swath of voters' decision in November.
I was going to mention the 18 to 29 vote in my response because it's possible that the Biden campaign could be facing the paradox of trying to, as the Democrats have tended to do over the last, you know, more than a decade, sort of pin a lot of hopes on young people turning out to vote, while also dealing with the fact that they understand that it's that particular generation, the youngest generation that's able to vote, is the one that is most pro-Gaza and most pro-ceasefire at this point, and the one most upset with the Biden administration's policy here. And so they might be dealing with a bit of a conundrum.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. All right. Well, I think we'll end it there. We'd love to hear from you. What issues did we miss? Are there other states that you think might be in play in 2024? What matters to you as you're thinking about the presidential election race? What's going to decide your vote? Now, we'd love to receive comments from you and may even, you know, feature them in a forthcoming episode, but we'll end it there. We'll see what happens on Super Tuesday. See if there are any surprises that take place on Super Tuesday.
And then the State of the Union on Thursday.
And then the State of the Union is on Thursday.
I have,
and because of the way it's timed out, you know, it very well could be even more clear that that's sort of the kickoff of the general election.
Right. And last year I created a State of the Union bingo card and a lot of people loved it. So I've created another one this year so that as you watch it and listen along, you can try to win bingo. I'll put it in the show notes and we'll put it on social media and in our Substack.
What
so,
a treat.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yes. All right. You've been listening to Where We Are.
Bye.
It's the end of the weekend, but I still wanna turn up. Yeah, I still wanna turn up. All I want is to go.